Hello, everybody. Charisse here with a very special announcement. I am thrilled to share that RCAT is now an official AIA continuing education provider. With this remarkable distinction, RCAT has launched RCademy, a continuing education platform for the busy AEC professional. And here's the really exciting part. You can now earn continuing education credits by doing exactly what you are doing right now. That's right, you can now earn AIA credits by listening to select episodes of Detail. Whether you're working around the house, on your commute, or stuck in a waiting room, just listen, take a brief quiz, and your credit will automatically be recorded with AIA. It's really that simple. Plus, bonus points that much of our content qualifies for that elusive HSW credit. And we all know how valuable those are. What more could you ask for? We aim to please. Find out more at rcat.com/continuing-education or follow the link in our show notes. And thank you for tuning in to the RCAT Detailed podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
The buildings are City of Austin landmarks, as Scott mentioned. We were required to keep the existing materials in place and replace in kind. So, you know, it's just an extension of what was already required.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, the graffiti that was old and was there and the Texaco signage was there was certainly something we wanted to consciously preserve. But as construction happened, as you may imagine, locals came by and would occasionally tag parts of the building. And in most cases, we let it just stay. You know, we just let it be a part of the environment. And so we really tried to let it kind of organically evolve and take its own kind of personality.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Paul Clayton, principal, and Sky Curry, associate, at Clayton Cordy in their Austin, Texas office. Clayton Cordy also has an office in San Antonio, Texas. Paul Clayton, AIA, leads Clayton Cordy's Austin office and has been instrumental in the firm's growth since 2005. His versatile design experience spans a range of project types and styles. In addition to being a skilled architect and designer, Paul is an accomplished entrepreneur. He has guided the firm, formerly Clayton & Little, with a disciplined approach since acquiring Emily Little Architects in 2005, following 4 years with the firm. Over the next 15 years as principal, he transformed a five-person practice into an interdisciplinary design firm with offices in two cities and a team of more than 30 full-time professionals. Sky Curry, AIA, relocated to Austin from the coast of Mississippi, where he worked on many post-Katrina projects. Sky is a graduate of Mississippi State University. He also enjoys reading, traveling, listening to music, and working on low-income housing projects for developing countries. The project we are talking about today is the very cool Cosmic Saltillo Restaurant and Bar in East Austin. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Tucked into the bustling fabric of East Austin, two century-old warehouse buildings, once hubs for petroleum distribution, have been given a new purpose. What was once a domain of the Texas Company, later Texaco, is now home to Cosmic Saltillo, a vibrant all-day destination blending coffee, cocktails, and community with gardens, art, and deep roots in local history.
It was Texaco Oil Depot. It's on a railroad track. It was the main railroad track coming into Austin for the industrial businesses around the turn of the century. And it was a building that included oil tanks, fuel tanks. They would come in, fill the tanks, and then it would be distributed around town. There's two buildings on site, both wood frame construction. One was more of a kind of an office kind of building and warehouse building. And then the second was more of a pole barn and maybe, I would assume, related to equipment of some sort.
Yeah, that's where they had the trucks oftentimes housed. And so we had, there's some brick stanchions along the back of the property where they had an elevated tank where the train would come by, stop, fill up the tank, and then they would package up all the petroleum products, and then the pole barn would house the trucks and they would go deliver them around town. So, you know, that really added a lot of character to the buildings. You know, there's some really beautiful Texaco signage that still exists on the buildings. But after that life, you know, the property took on kind of a number of different uses, from kind of art commune space. It was a music venue for a number of years. But really, for the last kind of decade or so, it's been kind of left unkept and really wasn't being used. And so the buildings were unfortunately allowed to kind of just slowly dilapidate and fall into a bit of disrepair. And so, you know, in one sense, the site had a tremendous amount of character and life and color and grit to it, and really had a lot of that East Austin spirit. But on the other side, the buildings were really didn't offer too much to work with from a functional standpoint. So the good and the bad for sure.
To meet this historic preservation project head on, Clayton Cordy brought together a team of experts aligned with the client's vision to create a succinct plan. Complementing this vision is what Paul and Sky call experience design, a guiding principle that shapes the project through the lens of their core ethos.
The physical condition of the buildings, that kind of is where everything started in terms of our investigation.
We were lucky, you know, these buildings are both local historic landmarks, and so there was an application, you know, that was submitted to the city that had a fair amount of research and history that was provided. So we were lucky enough to be able to tap into that, as well as doing some real thorough investigations for the buildings themselves, just in terms of how to approach them from a bringing them up to a functional state standpoint. You know, we're very lucky to have a lot of wonderful people that we get to work with, from waterproofing consultants to historic consultants all the way down the line. And so it was just taking the time to do a thorough enough review of the buildings themselves and able to tease out any of kind of the important pieces of history that we felt like were worth kind of celebrating and identifying. And then, you know, from a standpoint of how to approach the project from a design and how to meet our clients' goals and needs, at Clayton Cordy, we do something that's called experience design, which is kind of a very fundamental part of our process. That's a big part of how we approach just how to begin to think about a project and how to meet our clients' goals.
You know, experience in hospitality design is just another bit of context. We tend to treat it separately as a bit of context rather than the design creating the experience from the outset. We tend to plan the experience and design to it. It's a process that allows us to align with our clients and their vision. You know, prevents us from punching around in the dark in terms of what's in our clients' minds. We tend to try to tease it out in the beginning and create a North Star that the entire team can orient around. For hospitality projects, I think it's clutch to, you know, the experience isn't about only the envelope or the container of space. It's about what you smell, what you hear, the music that's on, why it's that music and not another album, what the staff are wearing, how they present. You know, there's just a whole host of things that together create the experience of a place. And, you know, a lot of these restaurateurs, they have it in their minds. They have done it before and they have kind of iterated their concept over and over to achieve it. We try to get as close to it as we can from the outset. And our response in space may be very different based on the intended outcome. So it's very much like any other bit of context. You know, it's just as important on a rural site as understanding how the sun travels across the sky or where the breeze comes from. So it's in an urban context for a hospitality project. It's something that we just don't skip.
The kind of the end result of that process for us is a document that effectively has no architecture in it. It's words and it's images, and it's trying to kind of create the vibe and the energy that we're trying to use. And so that kind of becomes our datum for the rest of the project that we can fall back on and look at and go, are we holding true to our kind of original vision? And so it really gives us as designers a real good palette of kind of experiential information to kind of work from and draw from to kind of make sure that connection between the user and the space and the client is as strong as it can be.
Building on the success of the original cosmic location, Paul and Skye had a clear vision and proven framework to guide them in achieving their clients' goals.
I think starting with the clients is important. They have a successful location just south of downtown, close to a university. It's the kind of place that really defines what Austin is, how Austin lives in people's minds. They really are one of the groups that are helping support it and define it. It's the reuse of kind of an old building on a site. They've created a really beautiful garden in front of it with pond, chickens. They compost on site. They serve kind of an all-day menu of coffee in the morning and cocktails and beer, wine in the evening. It's a place that the entire community uses. People bring their families out, kids running around, you know, students use it. They come and spend all day studying. It was, you know, just a real success. And the clients themselves are a trio of fun-loving guys. To create something like that, you know, it really necessitated the kind of wizardry of one of the clients in particular, who's real interested in organic gardening, and, you know, just brought that to what was initially just kind of a coffee shop and bar. And it was kind of unique to the area, and it's heavily used. People meet there before they go to other events. It's a real important place in the city.
It's always been being voted kind of best outdoor patio or best date spot or, you know, favorite coffee shop. And so there's a lot of goodwill that they built over time. And so I think our first charge was not to disrupt that goodwill that they had built, you know, was to kind of transplant it from South Austin, put it into the East Austin setting, you know, incorporate a little bit of that East Austin energy that is so prevalent there. You know, East Austin is a place in Austin that still you can find a lot of old school energy, you know, a lot of hole in the wall bars. It's got a great food scene. It's a wonderful mix of cultures that are all very expressive, you know, very colorful, lots of art, music in that area. And so there was a lot for us to draw from and add to the palette. And then after that, really, it was about setting us the stage for, you know, nature to kind of come in and take over and, you know, make the space feel like a bit of an oasis in downtown, for art to come in and add color and represent kind of the east side. And then really just for Cosmic to come in and you know, do their thing with their wonderful drinks and food and service, which is always just at the highest level. So yeah, it was really about just kind of continuing the energy that they had already created.
Long abandoned and covered in graffiti, the site's buildings stood as weathered relics of Austin's industrial past. But transforming them required extensive renovation, including critical structural stabilization.
In the taqueria, the pole barn, it was quite literally falling over. You know, in some of our early investigations on site, you know, we kind of looked at it and thought, man, is this thing moving on us? And we actually made a little tick mark on one of the pieces of framing. And a few weeks later, sure enough, it had started to kind of move off its mark. So we realized pretty early on that we were dealing with a live and potentially kind of dangerous situation. So we went to the city. They were good enough to give us an emergency permit to kind of stabilize that building, to shore it up. And then, Therese, we quite literally cut that building in half, raised it up, put it on a podium rebuilt the entire foundation below, did all our rough-in plumbing, rebuilt the framing of the ground floor, and then shifted the second floor back over to its appropriate location and then set it back over on the ground floor framing. So it was quite an exercise, and all credit goes to the construction team as far as that goes. That was really interesting and fun to see. But yeah, again, just so many unique site conditions that we had to deal with.
Fortunately, the project's landmark status and historical significance helped prioritize the demanding permitting process in close coordination with the city.
It typically adds a little bit of time to the permitting process because the historic review process is just another stop the submittal has to make through the city process, right? We tried to meet with the local preservation officers to give them a sense of what we're doing and get their buy-in kind of at the staff level before we submit our permit. And typically, you know, if we do that, it can sail through with staff support. At the Landmark Commission, if they decide to pull something to discuss it, it can delay the project up to 3 months in permitting. They have the ability to do that. It's rare when we've done the diligence beforehand and we have staff support. Because this was a landmark previous to our working on it, it does get special attention as it moves through that process.
And I'll also say, you know, just because of the state of these buildings, there was a significant amount of support for anyone who was willing to take on, you know, what was the big project of restoring these buildings and bringing them back to life. So the neighborhood was incredibly supportive, and we did get a lot of support from the city in our efforts. So again, a lot of credit goes to Cosmic for their willingness to take that on. But yeah, we were lucky enough to pass on consent on the first round through historic. And so that really was not a huge issue. The biggest part for me, at least, dealing with the city was upgrading all the utilities. You know, in Austin, there's a couple of ways to go through the site plan process. You know, you have kind of a very quick review, which is something that's usually done when there's very little done to the site. You have a very small amount of developable area that you can change, and there's pretty significant limitations. That's how we approach this project because of the timelines that typically that affords. If you go through a full site plan in Austin, it can take well over a year to get your permit. With an exemption, usually it'll take 1 to 3 months. And so that was our goal for the project, despite the many, many changes that we ultimately did have to change. So that process ended up dragging out a little bit just because I think we probably did the most involved site plan exemption in City of Austin history. But we were able to work it through successfully. And yeah, everything at the end of the day worked out good for us. So all positive. You know, and as Paul was alluding to, the city's done a wonderful thing where, you know, before we have to formally present the building and the project to both the public and the Historic Commission, they've set up kind of a formal process where we have just a few members of the commission that we can present our information to, get their early feedback informally, and then work to kind of get them on board with our ideas. And again, that usually allows us to move through that more formal big process much easier. And so, you know, if you take advantage of that process and you work with the city from very early on, more often than not, it's a very smooth process.
Allows them to be stakeholders.
That's right. Yeah.
The site has been reimagined, not just as a place to eat and drink, but as a living landscape. Between the two weathered warehouses, native plants bloom, string lights twinkle, and a koi pond reflects the soft curve of a wooden deck.
There's two main buildings, both wood frame. One of the buildings houses a bar and a coffee bar and spirits bar. Also restrooms off of that main space. Upstairs, there's a kind of a small attic that was converted into what they call a secret bar. They hold special parties and kind of holiday events up there. They decorate the space into a theme around the holiday and open it up. There is on one end of that building, there's an elevator tower that takes you up to a second floor deck over the main bar. And that bar faces downtown Austin. It's really almost as if you could just reach out and touch it. Great place to have a cocktail and watch the sunset. In the second building, the pole barn building, we inserted a taqueria, which is Cosmic's. Really, it's their kind of foray into food service. They wanted to have an offering at this location. And then the second floor of that building houses their offices and some prep space. Now, the interior spaces of this site really aren't the focus. You know, the focus has always been the grounds. There's a large pond that makes some reuse of some of the old tank supports. Some of those supports are also form some of the seating in the courtyard. There's vine-covered trellises and a concrete block wall that graffiti artists have painted on. You know, so it's a very much an exterior space. You're kind of meant to go into the bar and grab a drink and come outside, grab a taco, come outside to a picnic table. So it's heavily used. There's a DJ there all hours of the day. Even 9 in the morning, there will be a DJ there with people dancing. I mean, it's really turned into unbelievable success in the way that people are using it.
Well, and, you know, again, it was so important that we had some harmony with the original Cosmic location, which, again, really is all about the exterior. And so for us, you know, setting up the experience of the spaces, you know, instead of bringing you through the buildings, we brought you between the buildings, you know, kind of, and then the first thing you see is really the courtyard before you even enter into the buildings. And so, you know, it's really about celebrating that moment and kind of revealing that to everybody. And, you know, the courtyard is used in so many different ways. It was important for it to be flexible. You know, Cosmic throws so many different types of parties, whether it's just hanging out on an afternoon. They do markets. They do music venues. And so its adaptability was also an important part of the program.
Throughout, salvaged materials, corrugated steel, wood windows, jackhammered concrete, have been repurposed with care. And much of the original graffiti was also preserved.
You know, one of the charges, certainly from our owners, as well as kind of one of our original intentions, was to try and save as much as we could. And so you'll see things like, you know, we found a pretty significant amount of concrete that was buried under the ground. And so we uncovered that, we broke it up into pretty large sections and reused that. Instead of pouring a bunch of concrete for our sidewalks and pathways, we now have reclaimed concrete that forms our sidewalks and pathways on the interior. Paul mentioned the water feature in the courtyard. We found a big old water pipe that was buried that we decided to make the spout out of. The receiver of the water feature is an old top of a grain hopper that our landscape installer Billy Spencer had found out in his hometown in Marfa. And so it was very important that anything we could find and reuse, we did, and that anything that we added new to the site wasn't really new, you know, that it had age, that it had a story to it. And even still, any new materials that we did add, you know, was able to patina and find a harmony with the age of its kind of more matured surroundings. So, yeah, it was really interesting to try and see what we could make use of with what we found on site, and had wonderful support by the owners to try and get creative and make use of that stuff. So
it was also necessitated by the fact that the buildings are City of Austin landmarks, as Sky mentioned.
Yeah,
you know, that we were required to keep the existing materials in place and replace in kind. So, you know, it's just an extension of what was already required.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, the graffiti that was old and was there and the Texaco signage was there was certainly something we wanted to consciously preserve. But as construction happened, as you may imagine, locals came by and would occasionally tag parts of the building. And in most cases, we let it just stay. You know, we just let it be a part of the environment. And so we really tried to let it kind of organically evolve and take its own kind of personality.
The West Building now houses a bar and lounge, while the East welcomes guests with a new taqueria. Between them, a lush courtyard draws people in with its koi pond, open-air patio, and quiet nooks formed by crumbling brick walls.
The focus there really was the bar building. You know, because the pole barn was quite literally falling down and we did so much work to it, we were able to take the metal panels off of that building. We were given a little bit of grace there. We tagged them, we photographed them. And so that building has a relatively standard framing, sheathing assembly with the metal panels on the outside. The bar building itself was a very different animal. We couldn't take on the expense of pulling off those materials and putting them back on over the time. And so effectively we had to approach, at least from the walls, everything from the inside out. And so worked.
Because there's no drainage plane.
Exactly, yeah. The metal panels were effectively tacked right onto the wood studs. And so we worked with Erica Bonfanti over at Acton Partners, who's one of our great waterproofing consultants here in Austin and Texas, to effectively develop a system that would work from the inside out. And so effectively what we tried to do was create a drainage plane, and we had to put a drainage board into each stud cavity, tape it into place, liquid flash the bottom sills, create another kind of layer of flashing that went over all those sills and then down, which allowed the water to kind of run down the drainage board over all that flashing, then, you know, out beyond the skirt. And then behind all that, we did closed cell insulation to effectively, you know, kind of freeze all that in place to act both as an insulator and as a water barrier. And so that system allowed us to keep everything in place, keep the original kind of integrity and look and feel of the metal panels, but still provide a good functional workable core for the walls. And so far, everything's worked good. The other interesting approach to that bar was the roof over the actual bar itself. Part of the building is two-story, part of it's one-story, and the one-story is where we've got the bar. And we were lucky enough to have the original trusses, the original deck in that building, and that was something we really wanted to maintain. And to meet our energy codes, we had to add a pretty significant amount of insulation onto the roof. However, our friends at our historic preservation office did not want us to change the nature of the eaves, the width or the thickness of the eaves. And so what we did was effectively taper the insulation so that at the ridge, we had something like 10 or 11 inches of insulation. But as it made its way out to the eaves, it tapered down to effectively nothing. And so that profile at the edges was able to kind of keep its historic look, and we were still able to appropriately insulate the space. So couple ways to kind of trickily get around some of that waterproofing insulation.
Material selection was guided by simplicity, with new elements designed to complement the existing industrial salvage, preserving the raw textures and natural patina of the original materials.
Exterior materials are very much the existing corrugated metal that was on the buildings that we were required to keep. The Texaco brand was used in the shingle color, striped red, green, and white. We replaced those. The wrap on the elevator core was perforated metal, and the elevator inside the perforated metal was graffitied. We, in true bootstrap fashion, related to our clients, we did some lighting design to try to figure out how to light the core within, so at night, effectively, the scrim would disappear. Kind of through trial and error, we've been able to make that work successfully. There's concrete block on site, as well as landscaping materials, lots of plants, a lot of rusty metal. Drill stem pipe in Texas is relatively inexpensive. We use a lot in the landscape for trellises and the like.
Yeah, we wanted the materials to be very simple, you know, to be very durable. And you know, we wanted them to effectively do one of two things, either be painted or be vined over, or be able to kind of age and rust and have memory and patina that, again, would kind of find some harmony with the older materials that were already on site. We didn't want the new to, you know, feel obviously different or disconnected from the existing buildings. And so it was important those materials could pretty quickly find a balance within the property. And using those simple, affordable materials, again, kind of found a relationship with the original cosmic, kind of the old school nature of the east side, and just the industrial setting that the building kind of always existed in.
A defining feature of the Cosmic Saltillo location is its invitation to nighttime activity. To support this, a striking new mural tower, illuminated after dark, rises above the courtyard alongside a second-story bar that overlooks a vine-covered trellis.
One of the charges that Cosmic gave us early on, and one of the few ways we wanted to distinguish Cosmic Saltillo from the original location, was to activate it at nighttime. You know, Cosmic, what we call Cosmic Pickle, which is their original location, 7 days a week during the daytime, slam-packed. But at nighttime, for whatever reason, they would lose a little steam. And so they wanted us to make sure that the building really activated itself at nighttime. And so, you know, we knew we had to provide an accessible path up to the second floor balcony. And necessarily, we had to have this kind of tall elevator core that was going to be this very vertical kind of striking feature that was very different from the rest of the buildings. And so, you know, we just thought, let's just lean into it and let's make it a beacon. You know, let's provide some signage up high. It can be seen all the way from the interstate from I-35. It can be seen up on 6th Street looking down. And so there's a lot of really wonderful view corridors that we were able to take advantage of. And as Paul mentioned, the design that we at least sold to the clients was this idea that, you know, during the daytime, it would kind of take on this mass. You would see this metal scrim. And then at nighttime, as we illuminated it from within, the mural itself would really reveal itself. And, you know, it would start to become activated. The lights can change color. Again, they can have kind of seasonal relationships. So game days, it's orange or green for you know, our MLS team. Christmas, it's red. And so it's a real way to kind of activate the site and to go, man, what's going on there? So that's one of the ways that we tried to activate it at nighttime. And then as you move into the building, you know, we've kind of tried to create kind of an outside structure with these cables that are attached on one side, on the east side to the site wall, and on the west side to the bar building and patio, that creates this kind of funicular structure that allows for vines to grow up them, lights to be kind of embedded within them. And the hope is that over the seasons, it'll grow up far enough where we can have some shade out there and have some twinkling nights. So the transition between daytime and nighttime was something that was very important and that we focused on a lot.
The interior was stripped to the bare essentials and retained much of the original structure with an open kitchen and bar design that leans on connecting to the outdoor spaces.
In the main bar building, we essentially just scraped all of the layers and layers of past remodels and renovations out. The floor had thick layers of linoleum that were taken off. We found a very thick plank wood floor underneath, and assumingly it held some kind of load, but we kind of lightly sanded that, and that remained to be the floor. The original roof structure was exposed, and we just painted out the interior and left everything in place. So the mantra was really just to not mess anything up and just retain as much as what was there as possible. Some of the materials that were brought over from the original Cosmic location are things like a poured concrete bar, simple, durable materials, you know, that nothing's real fussy. So, you know, the place is really about, it's almost like an ice house type bar where you're meant to walk in, grab, and then go back outside. So,
yeah, that's right. The goal was to always keep the interior spaces more about function than comfort necessarily. Cosmic is always very, very busy. There's typically lots of lines. And so the interior spaces are really more about moving people through quickly and efficiently and then letting them find their space on the outside. And so, you know, we've got something like a 30-foot long bar, you know, with lots of different bar stations to kind of accommodate that kind of facility. And then at the taqueria, you know, the charge there was, you know, to let it kind of take on that old school Mexican taqueria feel. So again, very, very harmonious with kind of the East Austin vibe, simple materials. We've got some old Austin brick on the inside, a couple pops of color, you know, but really it's about the open kitchen, being able to kind of watch the people cook and the smells that they're created, grab your food and have a cool, fun menu and hear some music. And then again, go back outside and find your place out in the property and out in the trees. So the insides were, you know, it's a fine line to strike. And I think our interior designer, Veronica Yavores, in our office did a wonderful job of, you know, both connecting to the original location, respecting the history of the buildings, and yet still giving the spaces their own character and feel and having them have their own kind of integrity.
Aside from the MEP systems required for the taqueria hidden on one side of the roof, many of the utilities are exposed to further bolster the industrial aesthetic.
Very little was there originally. So once it was gone, it was just a matter of installing new services. The mechanicals exposed and painted out, and the trades were probably not the most difficult part of the project. It kind of solved itself.
I mean, we certainly had to upgrade all the utilities on the site. You know, we had to upgrade electrical. We had to upgrade, you know, the lines that ran into the mains of the streets. So there was certainly some of that just to get the site to a functional standpoint. You know, we did our best with the taqueria to hide all of the equipment on one side of the roof. And so it wasn't visible from the courtyard or wasn't visible from some of the elevated patios. And so just being, you know, very specific at how we site and locate some of those elements. But other than that, you know, we didn't work too hard to try and hide any of the interior elements. Again, kind of let it be industrial, as Paul said, you know, just call it what it is, paint it out, and let it be kind of unassuming. So we were again, lucky to work with some good people and had a pretty good plan of attack early on. So again, the thoroughness of the investigation of the buildings and having a good plan going in, I think helped a lot as far as all that goes.
Reimagining the original site, riddled with structural challenges and instability, easily emerged as the project's most significant hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, radical is a good word. You know, these buildings were in such a state where there was almost no insulation, there was almost no waterproofing, there was absolutely nothing accessible, you know, nothing was level. And so it really took an incredible amount of energy to just bring these buildings back to a usable state. I think it's worth mentioning, too, that the Cosmic team, you know, in their investigation of spaces, looked at dozens of properties around town and, you know, decided to make this space, even though it obviously needed as much work and as much time as it did, their new home, which to me is a testament to who they are in terms of how they want to and continue to invest and dedicate themselves to their community.
It's a scary thing to go into a project like this and, you know, with all the unknowns of a remodel to begin with, but to take a couple of dilapidated old buildings and run at it with a budget that you can rely on and your financial model depends on, you know, it could be a scary thing. I got to hand it to them.
And, you know, because these buildings were local historic landmarks because of their age and their use, you know, we were charged to not really disturb anything that the pedestrians can see. And so our approach to the buildings had to be, you know, by necessity, a little more unorthodox. So certainly the buildings, waterproofing, all of that stuff. And then we did have a few little hiccups during the construction process. You know, we had to change contractors early on in the process. And as always, you're going to have an owner change or two, which necessitates some scrambling at the last minute. And just because of the density of these buildings and how tightly we pack some of the program is, that was fun.
The construction phase brought its own set of challenges. From the widespread supply chain disruptions caused by the pandemic to the added complexity of switching contractors midway through the process.
It's kind of a miracle this project was realized. We had the unfortunate timing of starting in the pandemic. You know, if we didn't have everything stacked against us enough with these old buildings, you know, doing it during the pandemic made it that much worse. The supply chain issues, the pricing that we got that was no longer good. We all know the stories. I'm sure we've all got them. This project suffered from it, and it was difficult in that way. As Sky mentioned, the original contractor was let go, and we had to change horses midstream, which is another round of extremely painful things. So, yeah, that's from a high level, I'm often amazed that it actually happened.
The buildings themselves, again, were in such a state where we had to just basically peel them down to their bare bones. And so from a very early standpoint, we wanted to do as much of that kind of investigation so we could reveal what we were getting into as early as possible. And so once we started construction, you know, the buildings didn't have much on them, right, besides literal framing and the metal panels. And so besides the occasional shift in program from the owner, as far as our approach goes, you know, I think we had a pretty good plan of attack to kind of get to these buildings once we were able to kind of acknowledge and accept a lot of the existing conditions. We had, for example, you know, floors that weren't on the same level that we somehow had to figure out how to balance them up. We had pipe falls. We had water issues underneath the building. We had to figure out how to waterproof from below. So there was a litany of items that certainly did pop their heads up, but nothing that caused us too much heartburn.
For Sky and Paul, the project offered meaningful lessons. chief among them embracing nature as a guiding principle and remaining steadfast in the face of the complex challenge of preserving the site's historical identity.
You know, resistance builds strength, right? That's something I believe in too, for sure. So for me, I guess the first thing is that nature never fails you. For us, nature was such a big part of this program and a big part of the design tools that we use to create the environment and the experience. And so the more you can put people around nature, the more you can allow that to be part of your palette, the better off, at least in some of these settings, they will be. And then the other one is, don't be afraid to be bold. We made some moves on this site that were probably a little unexpected and a little stronger than they needed to be. And I think, you know, at least for the setting we were operating in the East Austin vibe, you know, where some of that is probably a little more encouraged and warranted, felt like we struck an appropriate note between, you know, kind of respecting the building and adding in something new and special and unique. And so kind of treading that line was a good lesson for me to not be afraid to kind of make a move like that, especially, again, in a city that encourages people to keep it weird and to let your flag fly and to do different things. So, yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think it was a lesson in persistence with, as I mentioned, the pandemic, the contractor, the difficulty of the project. CA was grueling. Sky, as project architect, bore the brunt of that. He showed outstanding persistence. It really is a labor of love to make something like this happen.
No, totally. And you know, as architects, you know, sometimes we have the idea, but it doesn't always manifest itself. So I think a lot of credit has to go to Cosmic, you know, for being willing to kind of go out on a limb with us and to try something different and something unique. Paul mentioned, we talked about the effect of the tower. That was something that we kind of sold to them in narrative only. You know, it was an idea that we had that we hoped would work. And, you know, they supported us and were kind of excited to let this thing have its own feel and its own unique language. So it was a really rewarding process to kind of go through.
Cosmic Saltillo invites guests not only to unwind, but to reconnect with place, with history, and with the natural systems that sustain it. Together, these aspects revive the space from a simple gathering spot into a vibrant model of ecological urban hospitality. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what wisdom Paul and Sky could share about taking on this kind of radical reuse project and how others could be better prepared for the challenges they might face.
I think part of it is setting the expectation with your owner. People go into a project with having grand visions and don't see all the dots between the first one and the last one. And so just understanding what you're getting into, both from a time and financial standpoint, and just frankly to prepare them emotionally, because it's not a standard process. It's not a design bid build. You're going to find things, you're going to run into things, and there will be audibles throughout. You know, the second part of it is, you know, this was a historic project, right? And there are inherently limitations to what you can do with your property, which sometimes people struggle with, especially if you're going after things like tax credits. You know, there's going to be some restrictions put upon you. And also, it's going to allow you to kind of lose control a little bit of your schedule and potentially your budget, because you're going to have to kind of give away to some of those processes. But for me, you know, in the end, and especially here in a place like Austin, it's worth the squeeze. You know, Austin is a place that I think responds so honestly to people in places that make the attempt to restore and to honor and to celebrate our past, our history, and some of our special buildings. You know, in America, I think personally, we move too fast to tear down buildings and to throw new things up. And so when you take the time and you afford the love and the care to take one of these landmarks and to reinvigorate it, and I think we've seen this already, people will respond to that kind of honesty. So the juice is worth the squeeze, even though it does take some effort.
Oh, I think Sky said it well. The only thing I would just one note to add to that is sensitivity to historic buildings and heritage is so important, and sites of heritage are being lost around the country. And I think that it's a real shame. you know, Austin's not the city that it was even 10 years ago. I've been here 25 years and wow, how different it has become. And I'm privileged really to have the opportunity to work on some of these heritage sites and try to preserve them and give them new life.
I always enjoy talking to anybody from Clayton Cordy, and I really enjoyed this conversation with Paul and Sky. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
In our family, growing up, we always used to say, you're either a producer or a consumer. And we always say, be a producer. Try to make something, try to shine back, try to give people and try to give the world something that means something to you the way it's meant something to your life. So, you know, if I can ever make something, a place where people can build a memory or have an experience, that in and of itself is much more than I'll ever need. So, and that's really why, you know, I think I went down the path of architecture, just, you know, just to be able to make something. For me, it's fun enough just to have something at the end of the day that stands there that represents all the hard work that you put into it.
I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to work on these sites in Austin. You know, a lot of the things that we work on locally aren't necessarily landmarks or historic in nature, but they're still these institutional places that are important to our community. And our firm doesn't necessarily impose its will on those places. You know, we try to practice durable design that will last through another 50 years, 100 years. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to avoid trend and the latest flashy moves, but that's always the hope that we can build our community in a way that is lasting. And I hate to use the word classic, but that really is, I feel like, my position in the firm, to be sure that we're not making moves that are about because we like it, you know, that we're doing things for all the right reasons and we're serving our communities.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.